through the Alaska Airlines studios.
This is Jake and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
We're getting you guys ready for Mariners opening day tomorrow against the Giants with Root Sports. Ryan Roland Smith joining us now on the Issaquah Pest Control Hotline. Ryan, how are you?
I'm doing great.
Thank good.
How you guys doing?
We're good. I think Jake's a little nervous.
Yeah. Ryan, each day that comes closer, Friday's the day, man, where I have to do this, you know, American Ninja Warrior deal. And I know you know how it goes because you did it a couple years ago. You got any advice for me?
Well, first of all, Jake, I've got to ask you, I haven't had a chance to talk to you about this. And first of all, I'm kind of upset you haven't asked me for any tips leading into the training. I mean, I am a ninja warrior. I mean, that thing's embroidered into that jacket. You know what I mean? I wear it every day. I've got to ask, what approach are we taking? Are we taking the, I'm an ex-pro athlete, this, I'm serious, I'm going to get to that warped wall, or are we taking the, this is just a bit of fun? Like, what route are we taking here?
Well, it's more of just a bit of fun, and I have to assume that that's the route that you took with this, because if I'm going to take this as seriously as possible and I'm an athlete and I don't complete this, then it's going to be too, it's going to weigh too heavy on my mental. How did you approach this?
The just like you, man, you have to. I mean, I stood up there and I was so nervous. I lost sleep. And, yeah, you know, people ask me, oh, how was it? And I'm not going to lie. It was more nerve-wracking leading into that than playing baseball. People think I'm nuts when I say that, but I'm standing up there. I had a split second. I had the Mariner Moose standing next to me. And I know that guy. I mean, he's like an ex-gymnast. He dances on the dugout. I'm thinking, man, you should be running this, not me. This is ridiculous. And the lights, you know, the lights are in your face. And by the way, I've got no tips for you if you're going to ask me. The lights are in your face. The course looks way bigger. It looks slippery. The water's cold. And it's nerve-wracking. But again, man, it's a lot of fun. And once I heard you were doing it, man, I was so pleased. You're going to have a lot of fun.
Ryan, I think you did.
If you've done somewhat of training, and then you should be okay.
Yeah, I've done somewhat of training. Yeah, that's probably a good
Ryan, he has blisters
category.
On his hands. So, hey,
Stacey,
did
you? I got to ask Stacey a question. Are you prepared for Jake walking in on Monday to start the show, completely different person? He's now an extreme athlete. He's talking differently. He thinks he's awesome. He's reading Extreme Sports Digest. He's going to be ready for that on Monday. I'm telling you, he's going to be a different person.
If Jake makes it through the course, he'll never be the same again. Like the nice kind of humble Jake you knew is gone. He's only going to be a jerk.
It's true. And Ryan, the whole time I want you to know that I've been thinking through this process and saying I've got to one up Ryan Roland Smith. That's been my only goal.
That's your goal.
That's my only goal in this process.
All right, Ryan, we've got a lot to preview with the season here. So I'm going to go ahead and, get started with maybe one of my favorite stories, and it's going to be the MLB debut of Taylor Trammell. I guess, what have you seen from him that you've really liked so far in Cactus League play, or maybe you've overlooked some of his tape from years past that you're excited for Mariners fans to see for the first time?
Well, the one thing that I'm first of all, I'm happy for this guy because one thing you notice in spring training, he has that hunger level to him. You always notice with some of these prospects, especially the Mariners, put them on these pedestals. Sometimes, even if they've played a month in the big leagues or 0 days in the big leagues, sometimes they feel like, well, I'm supposed to have this made because I've been told and everyone said how great I am. This guy's come in. First of all, let's not forget, he was a Padre. He was a prospect when he was with the Padres. All of a sudden, they kind of turned their back on him just a little bit. He was a bit of a throw-in with that trade with Ty France and Luis Torrens and the seven-player trade last year. So he's come into this position, and it's very similar to Brandon Morrow leaving the Mariners, going to the Blue Jays. Because he went over there, I've chatted to him about this. All of a sudden, you're not one of the boys anymore. You have to prove yourself. And you see that with Taylor Trammell. He came into camp, and he's got a ton of energy, and he's backing up on the field. I'm so happy for this kid. He won that spot. He earned that spot on the roster, and one other thing from on the field, hitting lefties. I watched him do it during spring training, absolutely owning some lefties, hit a bomb a couple times, and he just looks good. I'm so happy for the kid. And, Stacey, I'm with you. It's one of my favorite stories too.
Now, Ryan, one of the questions that I wanted to ask you is about Yusei Kikuchi. And the big thing for me is – I look at Yusei, and he's one of those guys that is just so unbelievably talented and gifted. and you know how successful he could eventually be. The big question is, how does he do in these pressure cooker situations, right? Can he take that next step this year? Yeah. How are you feeling about Yusei Kikuchi? Because that's also going to determine how excited I am about what this rotation can ultimately be. You know, I think you've got a good solid group with Marco and James Paxton. He can stay healthy, just as Sheffield. If you had Yusei playing at a high level, I mean, that's a pretty exciting rotation.
It really is. And you know, Jake, you've probably had this situation before where you want to be too coachable. That's something I've noticed with Yusei Kikuchi, where he's tried to make way too many adjustments. You know, the first year he was over here, Paul Davis, the pitching coach he had the first year, all of a sudden, hey, you have to start throwing your changeup. And he's like, well, I've never done that in my whole career. I know he's pitching in another country, but I've never done that. I've been overwhelming hitters my whole career. Now, all of a sudden, you've got to tell me I've got to go soft on some of these hitters late in the count. And then all of a sudden, the mechanics had to free up a little bit and be more efficient. And that's getting in his head. So all these little things that just completely take you off course of just, look, man, I throw 95, 96 with a nasty breaking ball, and I've got this little cut fastball now. I can dominate and keep it simple. And then you mentioned some of those pressure cooker situations and this rotation. But Yusei Kikuchi sits right in the middle of veteran presence with experience and youth. It's going to be interesting. Man, if he can put it together and just make that little adjustment, that runner on second, 2-0 count, execute a pitch, get back in the count, and then all of a sudden throw that fastball and attack hitters when he's in those pressure cooker moments, he could be really good. And that's going to be the difference of, battling through these 25-plus pitch innings to having some efficiency and getting deeper in games and then steamrolling from there.
Ryan, there's a lot to be excited about with this season, the young guys that are going to be playing. One of those young guys, though, I am nervous about, and that's Kyle Lewis. What's your worry meter on his injury, whether or not you think he's going on the IL? I mean, what are you worried about here with a timeline?
Yeah, I think, first of all, the timing of it really sucks because it's opening day. We've got 9,000 people in the seats. The sun's going to be out. Hopefully, I'm not a weatherman, but, I mean, the sun's out right now. So it's one of those things where you're like, man, you want to see this guy. You want to see this guy run out opening day, rookie of the year, the whole thing. The timing of it sucks. I'm not too worried about the injury. And I will say this, so I'll take that back. It is on the same repaired knee that he had. That's a little bit of a concern, but this is more of being a little overcautious with Kyle Lewis as opposed to anything else. I mean, when I was playing 2008, I think it was 2008, 2009, Ichiro Suzuki his goal was never miss an opening day. And then he played the WBC and all of a sudden he's got this stomach ulcer and he can't play opening day. And there was this big talk, and this sounds ridiculous when you're talking 162 games, but there was this big talk about, hey, making sure he's in that opening day lineup. It's like, why? I mean, like Scott Service says, you've got 161 games after this. I know it's a big deal. The timing of it stinks. I think he's going to be totally fine. Give him another week or so and make sure he's good to go and he can run at full speed and feel comfortable because that's, one guy. You want to see what he can do, and some of these other guys as well. What can they do in a six-month season as opposed to what we saw last year in only 60 games?
Ryan, there was a lot made about Jared Kelnick, his spring training. Obviously, the comments from Kevin Mather regarding the situation only spotlighted the situation even further with, service time manipulation, all this. Where do you feel like Jared Kelnick is at and what his process will be like to develop him in the minor leagues or to, get him more at-bats? And how soon do you think he could realistically be up with the big league club this year?
Well, the unfortunate part of 2021 is this first month is not going to be a traditional AAA riding, whether it's in a bus or that 5 a.m. Southwest flight to Dallas onto some other AAA city. Like that these guys have to deal with and being in close quarters with teammates and all the other little things, the variables that happen off the field, which can affect the way you play on the field. Because spring training and regular season, whether you're in the big leagues or AAA, are completely different animals. Your schedule gets thrown out your body clock gets thrown out the window. So I would have loved to have seen the month of April when he goes to some of these colder places. How does he respond? How does he respond to failure? Just a little bit. I think his timeline, he looked great in spring training. I love the fact that he does have a bit of an ego. He stands up for himself and everything else. I'm hoping that he walked into Jerry DePoto's office and everything he said in USA Today, he said the same thing face-to-face with Jerry DePoto and their boys, and they're in a good place because, this kid's special. We know it. It's going to be interesting, though, because this first month, what kind of in-game simulation can you get him? Because he's going to be up real soon. And it's not going to be a matter of, if someone gets injured, up he comes. It's going to be a matter of when he's ready to roll and when everything looks right and he's ready to take on the travel, the slumps, the different weather, time zones, all those little things, and he can roll with it and he can be, you know, good teammate and everything else, then he's going to make a huge impact.
This hour of Jake and Stacey is brought to you by the Pro Club. That voice you're hearing is Root Sports. Ryan Roland Smith getting you guys ready for opening day. That's going to be tomorrow evening at T-Mobile. Fans going to be in attendance. Ryan is also host of the Top Step podcast. His latest episode was with Mariners catcher Tom Murphy. Ryan, both Murphy and Mitch Haniger are going to be back after missing a year in action. What kind of impact do you expect that to make for this team?
Well, first of all, I'm so happy for those guys. I couldn't imagine, especially Tom Murphy, in the absolute peak of his career, getting a chance. They didn't bring in any other catchers, and all of a sudden he misses it because of COVID and then an injury. And for Mitch Haniger, you guys know when you're out of sight, out of mind, you go on vacation or you're injured or whatever it may be, and it's like, oh, don't forget about me. That's what I felt like with Mitch Haniger. They're talking about all these young players, and he has a chance now. He's 100% healthy, had a great spring. He's moving at game speed these last couple of weeks, same with Tom Murphy. I think they're going to make a massive impact. And just, you know, you mentioned the podcast, just having that chat with Tom Murphy, you can totally tell as an ex-pitcher that doesn't matter if you're a 22-year-old prospect coming up for the first time or you're James Paxton or Michael Gonzalez, you are going to vibe with Tom Murphy. And that's massive when you've got six guys to try and pull through 6 months of a season.
Ryan, we've been debating on our show, what is success for the Mariners this year? We've gone through this process. Mm-hmm. And especially over the last couple of years, we're just like, hey, look, wins, losses, they don't really matter right now. It's about the development. I feel like we're entering a different phase of this process that wins don't necessarily matter in the sense that if they make the playoffs or don't make the playoffs, it's the end of the world. But we should start to see this team make a different jump, right? This team should start to look different to everybody. Am I wrong in saying that?
Absolutely not. And I'm not going to sit here, and I'm sick of saying it too, and people who are driving around listening to this, you know, I don't want them to roll their eyes if I'm going to sit here and say, oh, you know, hey, there's a young team, and it's the first chance of 6 months, see how they go, and 2022, I don't want to say that. I think the only way that you call this success is if they're pushing for a playoff spot in September. Now, if they make the playoffs or they do or they don't, but if we're in the month of September and they're a couple games out, man, I'm stoked. But you go back in 2008, the other buddy on the 2008 Tampa Bay Rays team that went to the World Series, they were in a very similar situation with the Mariners. Joe Maddon was the manager, had all these young players, and I remember the year prior to that, a friend of mine, Grant Balfour, another Aussie, he said, look, man, this team's going to be a bunch of studs next year. And it was still in that thing where, oh, they have to develop. And you had these young, you know, cocky kids who were just like, hey, screw you. I mean, we're good. We can handle this level. We can handle the AL East, which they were in, and they dominated. They went to the World Series. And I don't see why. I know this sounds crazy, but if you can have that mentality as a young player and a young group and you all get along and you know, you have that good relationship and everything else, I don't see why there shouldn't be that push once we get into September. But again, I think for me, and I think I speak for all the Mariner fans, you want to be pushing on the door for the playoffs in the month of September. Otherwise, you know what? Bolster it up for 2022, I guess.
Yeah. No, that's a great way to put it. And so I think that kind of helps everybody as we're looking at the season, what the expectations are, or at least what would be the sign of a positive year for the Mariners. Ryan, it's been fun, you know, following you even through COVID, because you have been, as Stacey mentioned, the host of your own podcast, Top Step Podcast. What has been your favorite episode that you've done so far and why?
Well, I had Daniel Bard, who was the National League Comeback Player of the Year. I loved it because he was just an open book. He had the yips. You know what the yips are? Basically, you can't throw, you hit the backstop every time you throw a baseball. And it's just the weirdest thing ever. Chatting to him, he was just a flat out open book and he just dived right in. Plus, I had a couple of strains. I mentioned Grant Balfour, Liam Hendricks and Peter Moylan. That was if you can deal with some of the giggling going on, that was a lot of fun. But it's just been fun, man. It was a chance where guys were sort of sitting on the couch and I was able to jump on Zoom and just have some long-form conversations and open up about you know, different things they deal with as players and give them a chance to tell their story, man. It's been fun. So I am going to start stringing along a lot more Mariner players, keeping it local because we've got 6 months of Mariners baseball. So I'm excited about that. And they're all willing. They're all willing to share their stories. So it's been fun. Jake, after Ninja Warrior, dude, you're jumping on with me too. If you got a spare 40 minutes,
hey, anything for you, man. You need me for anything? You always know I'm there. So absolutely,
he's going to come in with a squad of people, though. If he gets past like two obstacles,
however, Ryan, if I'm
telling you, look out. I'm serious. He's going to come in like he's going to be wearing rock climbing.
I know.
You know, the whole deal.
Ryan, I'm not looking forward to it.
Here's the thing, Ryan. When I've tried to do it in training, I've been able to get the warp wall. The trick is I'm trying to find a way where I can skip all the middle part of the Ninja Warrior course and just go to the end. Because I don't know if I can get past that. That's my only hang up here.
Just the entire middle of the course is really what's holding you up. Got it.
You know, and the thing is, too, you see that wall, that's the famous part of it. So I was sitting there going, why am I spending time on this? There's no chance that I could get through the rest of this. Why am I spending? I just dropped 30 minutes on this thing. Yeah, just because it must be just an ego thing or something because you said I'm
TV.
I need to get back to stage one.
That's right. You know what I mean? That's right.
He is Ryan Roland Smith joining us to help us get a preview of opening day. Thanks so much, Ryan.
Of course, guys. Anytime.
All right, always a great time with him. It is 12:15. That means it's time for Four Down Territory, brought to you by Genuine Auto Glass.
This is Four Down Territory, brought to you by Genuine Auto Glass.
With Jake and Stacy.
Live for moments like this. Time for us to step up and take it.
First down, Jake, why was giving Tyler Lockett a massive extension a no-brainer for the Seahawks?
This was a massive no-brainer to give Tyler Lockett an extension because he has been one of the more productive receivers in this league over the last 3 years. He has been one of the most consistent pass catchers. He has been reliable. And he is one of the true great Seahawks that this organization has had. He is a tremendous teammate. He's a guy that doesn't complain. He shows up to work every single day with a great attitude and bought in. And so with that being said, at 28 years old, this team is the organization, John Schneider, Pete Carroll, looking at Tyler Lockett and thinking, look, there are still great years ahead of him. And if we can continue to keep this duo of Tyler Lockett, DK Metcalf, and Russell Wilson, that trio, we've got a great chance. And we're going to be explosive and we're going to be successful in the league. And it's going to be our job to build around those three and continue to make this offense explosive. So I believe that that's why it was a no-brainer for them. Tyler has proven them right every step of the way. When they traded up into the third round to draft Tyler Lockett as a special teams player, as a receiver, When they gave him an extension over Paul Richardson at the time, everybody was wondering, why in the world are you giving Tyler Lockett that extension after he had just broken his leg? It's because they believed in him, they trusted him, they knew what they got in Tyler Lockett, and this is no surprise because they continue to believe that Tyler Lockett is going to produce, and he is going to produce at a level that makes the $17 million average per year contract well worth it.
Second down. Stacy.
Curtis.
Hey.
Hi.
How's it going?
It's okay.
All right. What's one thing you'd love to see from Shane Waldron this year?
Now, we've already talked about it, but I want to jump back into it while we're talking about Tyler Lockett, while we're talking about the weapons that Russell Wilson is going to have, and that's the use of tight ends. There wasn't enough of it last year. Now, I think that was a mix of things. I think it was a mix of personnel, either not being healthy, not really being like, you know, a top tier guy. It's tough to call on Jacob Hollister to be your tight end number one when that's not really his role. And Greg Olsen is injured and dealing with a foot injury. So part of it was personnel. Another part of it was just not really opening up that part of the field a ton. I think that they really struggled to do that consistently. And when you look at a lot of the really good teams in the league, a lot of the really good offenses, they find a way to use their tight ends effectively. Either they have a great receiving running back or they use their tight ends really well. And even if it's just one tight end that's being used exceptionally well, hello, Kansas City, no one can tell me the name of tight end number two there. Guess, you're wrong. We don't have to get into
Dave
it. No, it's not. No, you're both wrong. You're both wrong. The point is, the important thing is they find a way to make the most of their great receiving weapons. I think that Gerald Everett can be that wide receiver three to help replace David Moore. So I'd love to see him used more. I think that that relationship he had with Shane Waldron in L.A. is going to be a huge benefit for Seattle.
Third down. Jake, what stood out to you about Gabe Jackson's new extension with the Seahawks?
The fact that it was as long as it is. I mean, they already have him under contract for three seasons, essentially, this year and two more after that. They give him a three-year extension. And the reason why you do that is it's hard to imagine that Gabe Jackson at age 30 is going to be on the team for five more years down the road. That would be, I mean, an unbelievable trade and an unbelievable play by Gabe Jackson over the next couple of years that he would prove himself that valuable into that, you know, late stage of his career. But the reason why you do it is because you're able to spread out the money a lot easier over the course of that time frame. And that's exactly what the Seahawks were trying to do, is they want to lock up and they want to add stability to their offensive line. Now you've got Gabe Jackson tied in. You've got Damian Lewis tied in. So you got your two guards locked in for the next, you know, few years down the road, and you can build and piece around that. I would love to see Dwayne Brown have another great year where they feel confident that they can treat him like Andrew Whitworth, the way that Sean McVay, Shane Waldron did with the Rams, that they're like, hey, even at age 36, we think that you could be the next Andrew Whitworth and play until you're 38, 39. We're going to give you a 2-3 year extension after that. That way you have your group pretty solidified. But that's what really stood out to me, is they looked at that guard position on both sides and said, hey, we want to solidify this, and we're able to spread your cap number, your 2021 cap number, down significantly to where we can continue to keep creating space, where we can add and be flexible with how we want to address our roster this year, not in years to come.
Chiefs backup tight end is apparently someone named Blake Bell.
I got it!
Fourth day.
I got it! I said Blake Bell. Yes. Blake Bell.
I don't think he was the second tight end with receptions, though.
Well,
I don't know. He had 11 last year.
Yeah.
That's insane.
Stacey, don't knock on the bulldozer, because the...
the bulldozer Bell.
No, he was. He was at Oklahoma.
He was a quarterback.
He was the... What did they call
OU.
Him? The belldozer. That's what it was.
The belldozer.
He was in my recruiting class. He was a quarterback coming out of high school.
Fourth down, Jake. Do the recent extensions given to Lockett and Jackson lead... what are those... recent extensions lead you to believe about the Seahawks?
Well, what it leads me to believe is that you get two massive extensions done with Gabe Jackson and Tyler Lockett. One, it's great to lock in those great players on your roster for the next few years down the road. You can count on them being there. But what it really does is it allows you to free up cap space. That's something that we've been advocating for this entire time. Do it either through a restructuring of Russell Wilson and Bobby Wagner's contracts, or you've got to find a way to extend players that have the highest cap hit on your roster. Tried to do it with Jaron Reed, didn't work out well. They've done it now with Tyler Lockett and Gabe Jackson. So what does it do? It gives them more opportunity. What did Bob Condotta say earlier on? Walking around money. They got some walking around money now when it comes to free
like
agency.
When your parents gave you like a $10 bill to go to the mall, and you're like,
oh,
I'm rich.
Yeah,
yes.
I can buy literally anything, but
literally
really
anything
nothing
in this mall.
What am I going to drop this on?
That's
what you're thinking the
yes.
whole
time. Pretzels.
Yes, that's
the
right.
Answer is Sbarro pizza.
And that's exactly how the Seahawks feel right now as they're looking at free agency, because you're not going to give somebody a massive contract at this stage and point in time, but what you can do is find a very good player at a reasonable price point that is going to fit what you want to do and add competition. And so I think that that's what the Seahawks are able to get out of this. It may not come within this month. They may wait till June 1st. They may wait until later in free agency. But it gives them that flexibility, and I don't think that this is going to be the last extension that you end up seeing this offseason.
Jeopardy has tapped a current NFL quarterback to play host for 2 weeks. Plus, is Theo Epstein returning to baseball within the year? That's all coming up next in the Timeline.
This is the Timeline
with Jake and Stacey.
Brought to you by 1-800-DUIOA.
It's the Timeline on Jake and Stacey, reading you guys the top stories you're going to see on your own timeline. You might have missed this one, because it comes from Red Sox land, but it'll interest you, Mariners fans. The Mariners are still looking for their new team president, and one name that's been thrown around? Theo Epstein. We've all heard that. He oversaw the Red Sox and Cubs on their trips to World Series, so obviously people hoping he could be the curse breaker for the Mariners. He's not with a team right now. He's actually with the league, and I think an advisory role, right, Curtis? But
yeah, with Manfred.
Yeah, but in an interview... In an interview that just happened with the Fenway Rundown podcast, Red Sox CEO Sam Kennedy says that he expects Epstein to be back running a team soon.
And hopefully Theo and Commissioner Manfred and the team will start to make some change. But it has to be done collaboratively with the players, which is another great reason you bring in someone like Theo, who's got tremendous relationships on the player front and the agent front. So I was really excited to see him go there. And I know it won't last. I don't think it'll last long, because I imagine him being back with the club at some point soon. He is not meant to. I know when he was in Chicago, when he normally was going to spring training, that was an odd feeling for him. Yeah. So I would expect to see him at some point getting back into the fray and into the arena.
Now, what you guys heard was Kennedy, Red Sox CEO, saying basically, you know, I think Theo likes this role with the MLB, but man, he's itching to get back with a new team. It's weird for him, so I'd expect that to change.
Interesting.
One team that's going to be with an opening, potentially.
Yeah.
Your Seattle Mariners.
Absolutely. And so it comes down to this conversation as well, is that it's not going to happen in the near future, maybe a year from now, right? And so when you talk about Theo Epstein, you talk about Scott Servais and Jerry DePoto, and do you give them an extension? Do you not give them an extension? This becomes a very interesting decision for John Stanton and the Mariners, is do you ride this year out and make your determination after this year, knowing that Theo Epstein has that itch, has that interest in potentially coming back given the right unique situation? And I believe that the Mariners fit the criteria. And if you're willing to give him a unique opportunity that he hasn't had yet, which that means, in my opinion, some ownership stake on top of everything else that he, you know, would be given in terms of baseball operations and controlling that at the present level, I think it's very much worth looking into. And so John Stanton has a unique decision on his hands. And we had John Morosi on a little bit ago talking about how, look, no one should be brushing this off about Theo Epstein coming to the Mariners. And, you know, that coming from him carries a lot of weight, in my opinion. So I think if there was a chance, a sliver of a chance, that if you waited a year for Theo Epstein, would you guys rather wait instead of give that contract extension out to DePoto?
You mean in case the role was going to be changed, and so you wanted to make sure DePoto would be okay with that?
No, what I'm saying is that a year from now, do you wait a year from now and not give Servais and DePoto an extension, thinking that, hey, I want to at least give myself an opportunity to be in conversations with Theo Epstein if he was willing to come and return back to
baseball? I would.
I
mean, you're going to have to make a decision before then, and I know that this is for some people this tired thing, and they're like, look, I don't care what he was able to do for other teams, but I do. I care that he was able to help lead the Red Sox to success.
Would you not care?
And the Cubs. Well, I think some people think like, okay, well, congrats. He did that for two other teams, and that doesn't mean he'll do it for the Mariners. Some people think he's not going to be interested in the Mariners. And I think there's a good portion of fans that want to see a complete change in the landscape of leadership, and they feel like Theo Epstein is just a very good version of some of the same. You know what I mean? Like, they feel like, I don't know, I'm just saying that there are Mariners fans who I think would feel, they want to see a more drastic change. For me, I would love to see more shifting, you know, a shakeup with an organization that hasn't been able to find success for two decades. But I would also be very fine with Theo Epstein getting here. And Curtis, you brought this up, you know, it was after we talked with Mike, so it was during a break, but I said, well, I wonder if Theo would be interested in coming here, given that the role is going to be split now and it's going to be more of a financial team growth, and then the separate role is GM, like Jake just pointed out. And you said,
well, Theo's a guy you make an exception for. If Theo Epstein, if that's somebody you are confident you can land, and what's going to take to get him here is giving him full control of baseball operations, you got to give that up. Like, that's not something that can really be negotiated. Like, you want Theo Epstein running your baseball operations. He's been incredible in two stops. Why limit him here if you're just going to have him focus on the finances? That's like that's like getting Michael Jordan and only putting him on the bench, okay? Like, you've got him. You can use him for a full 48 minutes.
Well, and,
why
and,
not do it?
And any of those Mariners fans that are looking at Theo Epstein going, nah, I want something completely different. Like, I'm sorry, what? You don't deserve to be a part of any of these other conversations moving forward. Like, I'm sorry. If you have an opportunity to get Theo Epstein, then I think it is worth going through the year and waiting it out. You may not land him, but if you don't do everything in your power to try and see that through, I think you would be doing a disservice to your organization. And I like Jerry DePoto. I love Scott Service. I like these guys. And I wouldn't be upset seeing these guys stick around or hopefully be around for this whole rebuilding process. But I think that you have to go through that. And if that means waiting a year before, you may get to the point and you may get to the close to the finish line. Theo Epstein says, you know what? No, I'm good. Then, okay, you extend Jerry DePoto and go from there at that point in time. But I think if there's a chance and you're having conversations and he's interested and doesn't immediately turn you down, I think you got to see it through and see what happens.
All right, very quickly, going to jump to just two final stories here in quick succession. First of all, we all know that one of the coolest trophies in sports is the Stanley Cup, mostly because you can actually bring it home. You can drink out of it, put a baby inside of it, whatever you need to do with the Stanley Cup. That's what makes it so cool. But wait, I think another trophy has topped it. So the winner of NASCAR's Bristol race receives a sword as a trophy, and its most recent winner, driver Joey Logano, talked about what he did with that.
So that's your third Gladiator sword from winning two normal concrete Bristol races and one dirt Bristol race. What are you doing with those Gladiators? Do you just hang them up? Do you look at them? Or, like, you chop wood? What are you doing those? What are you doing with them swords?
Well, the first thing you do is you keep them away from your kids. I don't need Hudson running around with a sword. But, you know, I it's funny you brought this up, because just before we did this, we were running around Clutch here and was doing some funny videos of me just chopping stuff. So I was trimming the hedges. I cut through a Coca-Cola bottle. I was going after it with stuff. So it kind of feels good, too, just to chop stuff.
That's exactly what you do. If you get a sword trophy, you chop things.
Absolutely.
Go find things in your house to chop. And
it doesn't need to be things that, like, would normally get chopped. Chop a printer.
Yeah. Yeah.
Chop an old monitor.
I can't get over this. How unnecessary is this trophy?
It's incredibly necessary.
No,
what are you talking
not.
About?
It's,
how else do you chop a printer?
If you got a
Jake?
Trophy with a sword, I'm assuming that it's some type of plastic or that it's not.
No, it's,
no,
it's a
sword.
This is a real sword.
Yes.
That you can do serious damage. You can hurt people with this.
Well, it's not people. Yeah. I mean, you're not chopping people, Jake, you
monster.
I'm
just saying it can be used as a weapon. Like, that is power. You are wielding, you not only one, but you are wielding power in your own hand.
I just feel like if you were going to chop.
You're ready for a medieval fight if it ever broke out, Stacey.
If you're chopping people up and that's your end goal, you're not going to enter a NASCAR race to get a sword. That's going
all
through,
I'm saying
through
is
a lot.
It's wildly unnecessary, but awesome at the same time. Like, that. It's awesome.
Right.
I would be carrying around a sheath for like a month, and I would have some armor, and I would just
take
be walking
out
around town, just acting like a medieval
knight.
Oh, you
don't need this couch anymore?
Yeah, that's
chop
right.
It.
I'm doing the people a great service.
All right. The two latest moves for the Seahawks, extending OL Gabe Jackson, and now wide receiver Tyler Lockett. What's it tell us about the direction this team is moving in? That's next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Ross.
Jake, the Seahawks made moves. I don't know if you knew that.
Oh, they did?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Well, here's what they did.
Well,
they extended Gabe Jackson, which we found out the other day.
I like
bringing
that.
Bringing up some cap space. And then this morning, news broke that they had extended Tyler Lockett. Brady Henderson of ESPN more recently had some details on that. By the way, he said that it takes Tyler Lockett's cap hit from $14.9 million this year, which was the third most, to around $7 million this year, which gives some much-needed cap relief to the Seattle Seahawks,
yes,
who last time I checked were like right around the bottom, either about a million over or less than a million to spare. So they really, really needed that. And now they get some with using that for Gabe Jackson and Tyler Lockett. However, that is really the side effect of extending them. It's not the primary goal. The primary goal is because you want these two guys around. So let's talk about what it means if they want them around.
And I would say that if you look at this, these two moves, you want these guys around, but these two moves allow you that $7 million cap space savings from Tyler Lockett. That's huge. In a market where you are, it gives you a lot more run than any other year. Like, you look at the deal that they had with Kerry Hyder. Kerry Hyder's cap hit was nothing. I mean, it was like $2 million. I mean, it was nothing. Chris Carson's cap hit for 2021, two plus million. So you can get good quality players with little cap space when you're able to sign them, and then you tack on what Gabe Jackson, what his deal was and what it was able to save them. It saved them around, I believe it was $5 or $4 million on that cap. So now you've just opened up, you know, a little over $10 million on your cap space now in a market where that is extremely favorable to you. We'll see what ends up happening. I have to imagine that Jamal Adams' extension is going to get done before training camp. That doesn't necessarily make you a buyer right now. That Jamal Adams' number would, you know, add some legit flexibility to your number at the current moment. But it does give you that walking around money that we joked around about, that you can feel good, Stacey, knowing that if there's a player that you want back, a KJ Wright, someone at the corner position, that you can go out and bring them back at a price point that will be favorable to you, and you're not going to miss out just simply due to financial constraints.
Now, I don't think that the Seahawks are making these moves specifically to satisfy Russell Wilson. Like, as much as I know that John Schneider and Pete Carroll probably value Russell Wilson as a franchise quarterback, knowing that's hard to find, I doubt that they're maneuvering everything they do in free agency just to make him happy. But I have a hard time seeing this not as a side effect of this making him happy.
For sure.
We got you a new guard. That's what you wanted.
I agree with that. That these moves weren't necessarily made with Russell Wilson in mind, in the sense of, oh, are we going to make these moves to make Russ happy?
No.
These were good business decisions for the team. And in happenstance, it's also going to be positive when it comes to Russell Wilson looking at this team and the outlook and everything moving forward. You feel good about Gabe Jackson? Well, guess what? We just locked him up for 5 more years. You feel good about Tyler Lockett? We just locked him up for 5 more years. So I think that part of it is very positive, to your point, Stacey. And I think that when you look at Gabe Jackson in particular, he's a player that I look at and say, they made that move given to appease Russell Wilson. That was a move that they don't typically make. Stacey, they have not spent over $8 million in free agency their entire tenure here in Seattle. Think about that. With outside free agents, they have not spent over $8 million on a single free agent. They spent, when they traded for Gabe Jackson, his cap hit was 9.6. That's a difference. That's a difference in mentality to go get a good quality premium player, and now they maneuver that money as in an extension. But that's a different move, and I do believe that that's a direct effect or impact on the way the Seahawks approach this. Would they have addressed the left guard position? Yes, no doubt they would have. But how would they have addressed it? I think it was changed given the circumstances around that particular subject this offseason that we have widely talked about.
Now, do we think it makes it any trickier to lock up DK Metcalf? Because you're going to have to do that soon. And we're going to be getting into the state of the Seahawks union. Yesterday we did offense. Coming up in about less than 10 minutes, we're going to be looking at yesterday we did defense. We're going to be looking at the offense. So we aren't going to touch on DK Metcalf's future as much. So let's just do it here. Do we think that becomes trickier?
No, I don't believe it does. And here's why. The Seahawks, they always look at things 2-3 years ahead. You're telling me that they planned this move, that they picked Tyler Lockett over DK Metcalf? I don't think so. I think that they made this move in plans and preparation for the knowledge that DK Metcalf will be there, that they're looking at Tyler Lockett and DK Metcalf and saying, these two guys together as a duo is one of the league's best. We have one of the league's greatest players and one of the great quarterbacks in this league in Russell Wilson. These three guys can be dynamic and special for years to come. We want to keep this group together. And And if you think about the cap ramifications down the road, DK Metcalf's contract, is, if Tyler's getting 17 mil per year, we knew that DK's contract was going to be big. But this contract will be massive if he has another year where he builds upon what he's done from last year. If he continues to keep impressing and keep building on what he did a year ago, his deal is going to be massive. But here's the positive. What do we know what the cap is going to do over the next 3-4 years?
Grow exponentially.
It is going to balloon. And so a contract like Tyler Lockett's, like, wow, that's a lot of money. DK Metcalf, when he initially signs that, Jamal Adams, it's not that these are funny money or that it's not big contracts, but they're not going to have as much weight as a lot of people anticipate. The first 2 years of the contract, you'll be able to alleviate a lot of that money and backload it to the point where now you're starting to hit some of those balloon years in the cap in, you know, 3 years from now, and it won't be as big of an effect on your cap or as much of a constraint as some people are thinking or anticipating.
It's the state of the Seahawks union address yesterday. It was defense. Coming up next, it's offense.